It should be legal under federal law to fire people just because they're transgender or just because they're lesbian, gay, or bisexual.
Justice Alito noted that Congress is already working on this issue, and he questioned whether courts should be in the business of rewriting the law.
There are the votes in the Senate to pass it if they can do it without a roll call.
I lost my livelihood. I lost my source of income. I lost my medical insurance.
What happened to me was wrong, and hopefully we can correct it.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Uganda resurrects its Kill the Gays bill. Brazil's Bolsonaro is rebuffed in his attempt to defund queer films. And the U.S. Supreme Court goes to work on LGBTQ job rights. Those stories and more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Rob LaCrone.
And I'm Jessica Andrea.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending October 12, 2019. Uganda's Kill the Gays bill is coming back to life. Expect the latest edition of the proposed law to mandate the death penalty for homosexuality to be introduced in Parliament within weeks. The last version of the law passed in 2013. But a court overturned it on a technicality the following year. The government of President Yoweri Museveni signaled at the time that it would eventually try again. The same government remains in power today. Its five-year-old arguments were regurgitated by the ironically titled Ethics and Integrity Minister, Simon Lokoto. He told Reuters that homosexuality is not natural to Uganda, but there has been a massive recruitment by gay people in schools, and especially among the youth, where they are promoting the falsehood that people are born like that. Uganda's British colonial-era penal code already punishes consensual adult gay sex with up to life in prison. Lokoto confirmed that the new edition is still a Kill the Gays bill, saying, "Our current penal law is limited. It only criminalizes the act. We want it made clear that anyone who is even involved in promotion and recruitment has to be criminalized. Those that do grave acts will be given the death sentence." He affirmed that President Museveni again supports the bill.
It's not easy being queer in the East African country. Pepe Julian Onzima of the group Sexual Minorities Uganda warned that when the law was introduced last time, it whipped up homophobic sentiment and hate crimes. Uganda faced widespread condemnation and economic sanctions when the original law was signed in 2014. The European Union and the United States are contemplating such sanctions again this time, but Lokoto said his government remains undeterred. He insisted, "We don't like blackmailing. We can't just bend our heads and bow before people who want to impose a culture which is foreign to us." Onzima fears that the law's passage will lead hundreds of queer people to flee the country. The activist said, "It will criminalize us from even advocating for LGBT plus rights, let alone supporting and protecting sexual minorities." Edwin Sisange of the African Equality Foundation told Pink News that the reintroduction of the bill is the government's desperate attempt to stem the growing popularity of opposition candidate Bobby Wine. They're charging that Wine is supported by Western gay people. Parliament could vote on the new Kill the Gays bill before the end of the year.
U.S. President Donald Trump and his administration continued their assault on LGBTQ rights and dignity this week, even as impeachment looms overhead. Secretary Mike Pompeo's State Department now requires that lesbian or gay foreign diplomats be legally married if they want to get their partner's spousal visas, a policy initiated in 2009 during the Obama administration had granted visas to the domestic partners of diplomats serving in the U.S. That policy covered those working at the United Nations, the World Bank, NATO, and in foreign embassies and consulates across the United States. A State Department spokesperson claimed that the policy change is meant to ensure and promote equal treatment, since unmarried domestic partners of heterosexual foreign diplomats are also ineligible for spousal visas. There's one big difference. Less than 12% of the UN's 193 member states have open civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples. Especially in Africa and the Middle East, consensual adult same-gender sex is harshly punished, even with execution. A foreign diplomat and their same-gender partner could face criminal charges or worse when they return home if they legally marry in the U.S. to get the spousal visa. UN Globe is a group that promotes equality for all LGBTQ staff at the world body or in its peacekeeping operations. They point out that same-sex couples, unlike opposite couples, have limited choices when it comes to marriage. Obama UN Ambassador Samantha Power described the policy change as needlessly cruel and bigoted.
Brazil's proudly homophobic president, Jair Bolsonaro, suffered a judicial setback this week. Under Trump of the Tropics, Bolsonaro's direct orders, the National Film Agency yanked grants totaling more than $17 million U.S. dollars for about 80 films. Only four of them had LGBTQ themes or content. Bolsonaro said in August that funding those kind of films was throwing money away. So Brazil's citizenship minister, Osmar Terra, ordered the suspension of all film funding a few days after Bolsonaro's remarks. Judge Laura Carvalho granted federal prosecutors' request for an injunction against the funding freeze. Carvalho wrote that freedom of expression, equality, and non-discrimination deserve the protection of the judiciary power. Prosecutors argued that Citizenship Minister Terra should be fined and banned from holding elected office for up to 8 years for administrative misconduct. They charged that, as there was no legal way to prevent the only four LGBTQ projects from being excluded, the solution found was to sacrifice the entire process. Director Emerson Maroneo's film was one of the four queer-specific funding contenders. He told Reuters that, at least for now, justice was done. "We are living lonely times, but decisions like this make me feel like we are back to living in a democracy." Bolsonaro's government can appeal the decision.
Danish professional hockey player John Lee Olsen has become the third in the global sport to come out as a proud gay man. The 27-year-old goaltender plays for Rungsted Seier Capital. Olsen made the announcement during a live TV interview this week and said that he was ready to show that you can be gay and play ice hockey. He said that he got nothing but support when he told his teammates in August, but he expects to be heckled when he plays. He said that it's something I have to be ready for and be mature about. Canada's Brendan Burke and Sweden's Lars-Peter Karlsson preceded Denmark's John Lee Olsen out of the closet.
Openly gay Polish lawmaker Robert Biedron was hailed as a hero this week for helping to rescue a 2-year-old boy and his father from a burning car. The Associated Press reported that the father's car had collided with a truck and burst into flames in a city south of Warsaw. Local firefighters posed with Biedron and praised him in a Facebook post. The caption read, "Like a real fireman, he went to the burning car with a fire extinguisher." Biedron's heroics probably will not help the political fortunes of the opposition left-wing alliance that his Spring Party belongs to. Polls have it in third place prior to mid-October's National Election Day, far behind the ruling far-right Law and Justice Party.
Finally, the 4.5-hour October 8th LGBTQ town hall on CNN, hosted by the Human Rights Campaign in Los Angeles, was a lot for some people to endure. 9 of the leading candidates participated in individual half-hour interviews by rotating CNN anchors that included openly gay news anchors Don Lemon and Anderson Cooper. According to most analysts, openly gay contender South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg did well. So did New Jersey Senator Cory Booker and Texas Representative Beto O'Rourke. There was general consensus that perennial frontrunner Vice President Joe Biden did not do very well at all, particularly with his rambling denunciation of old San Francisco gay bathhouses. If social media is the best indicator, the question and answer of the night belonged to Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. In case you haven't already seen or heard it,
"We're on the campaign trail, and you're approached."
"You have been, yes."
"And a supporter approaches you and says, 'Senator, I am old-fashioned, and my faith teaches me that marriage is between one man and one woman. What is your response?
Well, I'm going to assume it's a guy who said that. And I'm going to say, then just marry one woman. I'm cool with that. Assuming you can find one.
Senator Warren jumped ahead of Biden in some polls this week to narrowly lead the pack.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending October 12, 2019. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out Radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Rob LaCrone.
And I'm Jessica Andrea. So much
cooler online. There's nothing cooler than the world's only international LGBT radio magazine.
Unless it's thiswayout.org.
At thiswayout.org, you'll find program information,
related videos,
expanded features,
News Wrap transcripts,
CDs, and downloadable material.
It might not be cooler than radio,
but there's much more This Way Out at thiswayout.org.
All in the courtroom, I'm gonna let it shine, let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
We've got comprehensive coverage of this week's U.S. Supreme Court hearings on LGBTQ people's right to work, right after we observe LGBTQ History Month with this Rainbow Minute.
The Harlem Renaissance, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Known as one of the most culturally romantic periods in American history, the Harlem Renaissance would leave a lasting impression. It all began in the very early 1900s when a large migration of Southern blacks transformed the neighborhood just north of New York City's Central Park into the most populous African American community in the country. By the 1920s, Harlem had become the epicenter of Black American art, music, and literature, and soon was exploding with nightlife. The Jazz Age Harlem offered an openness and freedom for those in the life, the term often used for those attracted to their own sex. While the word homosexual was never mentioned, gays and lesbians found a place to flourish. It became fashionable for white partygoers from Manhattan to seek the exotic, unrestrained nightlife of Harlem, where social restrictions were often left at the door. They went to basement speakeasies or to cabarets like the Cotton Club. There, black entertainers rubbed elbows with homosexuals and transvestites, which was considered quite chic. Many partygoers were gay themselves, meeting in Harlem bars that catered to the black and white, the heterosexual and homosexual. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Anna Edwards.
This light of mine.
Does discrimination based on sex include discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity? The U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments on October 8th in three cases that will determine whether or not federal law protects LGBTQ people from discrimination in the workplace. Two cases involved gay men who were fired simply for being gay. In the other case, a transgender woman was fired for her failure to adhere to strict gender-based dress codes. Outside the courthouse, more than 100 LGBTQ activists were arrested for civil disobedience. Inside the hearing, pivotal conservative Justice Neil Gorsuch pondered whether the court should consider what he called the massive social upheaval a ruling in favor of the plaintiffs might cause. That was part of the argument offered by lawyers for the Michigan funeral home that fired longtime employee Amy Stevens when she announced her transition. The Trump administration's position echoed that rationale. John Bursch is an attorney for the right-wing Alliance Defending Freedom.
The justices across the bench were troubled by the fact that the ACLU's argument would eliminate all sex-specific policies in the workplace, whether they be sex-specific showers, dress codes, restrooms, sports teams. Every single one of those things would have to go. Justice Ginsburg observed that unlike other classifications, certain distinctions require treating men and women differently. That should be patently obvious to all of us. Justice Alito noted that Congress is already working on this issue, and he questioned whether courts should be in the business of rewriting the law.
Plaintiff Gerald Bostock was a child welfare services coordinator in Clayton County, Georgia. He was fired when word got out that he had joined a gay softball league. He told NBC News,
"I lost my livelihood. I lost my source of income. I lost my medical insurance. I was still recovering from prostate cancer."
Bostock's attorney, Brian Sullivan.
You can't think about a person's sexual orientation without thinking about his sex, right? A gay man is only a gay man if he's a man attracted to other men.
Transgender plaintiff Amy Stevens spoke to the crowd outside the courthouse.
I would like to say thank you for all the support that I'm getting. I appreciate each and every one of you. I'm glad to have been able to bring this before the courts, and what happened to me was wrong, and hopefully we can fix that and correct it from this point on.
It all goes back to sex and Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. New York Law School professor Arthur Leonard reviewed the origins of that measure with Gay USA's Ann Northrup and Andy Hum.
When the Civil Rights Bill was reported out to the House of Representatives, sex was not listed. The grounds that prohibited discrimination mm-hmm. were race or color, religion, and national origin. Mm-hmm. And a floor amendment was proposed by a conservative Southern congressman who was not in favor of the bill to add sex. Some people say it was a poison pill.
Yes.
You thought you get it in the bill and then it'll die.
Right.
It passed.
But yeah, a weird coalition of Southern conservatives and Northern liberals got together and added sex. And mm-hmm. then it went to the Senate. And in the Senate, it went directly to the floor under a negotiated agreement to keep the conservative Southern senators, who were the chairs of all the committees, from blocking it up. So it went into the Senate. There's very little debate or legislative history about what sex means in there. Mm-hmm. And after a lengthy filibuster, it was passed.
Leonard went on to explain how the Supreme Court hearings should be viewed.
The first thing that you have to remember is this is judicial theater.
Yes.
How many cases are decided based on the arguments in the hearing? You ask any judge, and they will tell you a very tiny percentage.
Right.
Because before there's this hearing, all the parties have submitted briefs, extensive briefs, with their legal arguments all spelled out. Mm-hmm. Amici, that is friends on both sides, have submitted their briefs. The court has more than 50 briefs altogether mm-hmm. On these three different cases all combined. And in the oral argument, the judges presumably ask those questions that are particularly bothering them, having already studied the issue. So they're just focusing in on the points, the pressure points, the things that they think are very critical that need to be resolved, and looking for what kinds of answers they get, and then asking one side what they think of the other side's answers. And It's also a forum in which they try to persuade each other sometimes.
Yes.
Sometimes they use questions to try to make a point with the other judges.
Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez of Democracy Now! Chatted with the ACLU's James Essex about the hearing.
What surprised you most? Lay out the key questions and where you think the court's going.
Sure. So the key question here is it sex discrimination to fire someone because they're transgender or lesbian, gay, or bisexual? And obviously, our position is that, of course, it is. You can't explain who a transgender person is without talking about the person's sex. You can't explain who a gay, lesbian, or bisexual person is without talking about both the sex of the individual and the sex of the person that the person is attracted to. So what else could it be other than sex discrimination? Lower courts have increasingly recognized that, indeed, anti-LGBT discrimination is a form of sex discrimination and have allowed LGBT plaintiffs to win cases to redress discrimination in a wide range of contexts, from employment to housing to education in the schools and access to health care. And all of that is at risk here because the Trump administration was in the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday asserting that it should be legal under federal law to fire people just because they're transgender or just because they're lesbian, gay, or bisexual. Now, that's kind of astounding by itself and a complete turnabout from the position that the Obama administration took. In fact, the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, a federal agency whose job is to enforce the federal law that bars sex discrimination, the EEOC brought the lawsuit against the funeral home on behalf of Amy Stevens. And now what we have is the EEOC, represented by the Justice Department, in the United States Supreme Court, arguing the other side of the case, saying we should never have brought the case because there was no violation of law there. So in terms of what happened in court, the question in any case like this is, okay, do we have five votes? So the four more liberal justices had a bunch of questions, but my takeaway is that I think that they would vote for the plaintiffs, for the employees in both of these issues. As has been reported widely, Justice Gorsuch asked many questions of both sides and seemed to be wrestling with this issue in a way that his colleagues on the right were perhaps not.
And he's what's known as a textualist?
Indeed. He is a textualist. And what that means is that a textualist says, look, I don't really care what Congress was thinking about when they passed the law. I'm not so worried about what they thought they were doing. I'm going to look at the words that they used, and I'm going to figure out what do they mean in real life and apply them as such. And so the arguments from the Trump administration were largely non-textualist arguments. They were saying Congress wasn't thinking about LGBT people in 1964. Our point that seemed to appeal to Justice Gorsuch is it doesn't matter what Congress was thinking about. The question is, the statute says no sex discrimination. Sex is supposed to be irrelevant to people's ability to perform at work, and that is what happened here.
And what about Kavanaugh?
So Justice Kavanaugh asked one question that was not particularly illuminative, and so we're not sure. I can't tell from that where he is going to come out. Justice Gorsuch seems to be wrestling with this. Had questions for both sides, and I think that he thinks that. My sense is he thinks that, yes, sex was one of the reasons that Amy Stevens was fired and that the two gay men were fired. I think he's also wrestling with a separate set of questions, which is dress codes, restrooms. How does that all work out? They're worried about the consequences of ruling for the LGBT plaintiffs.
That was ACLU LGBT HIV Director James Essex with Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. On Gay USA with Andy Hum and Ann Rothrup, law professor Arthur Leonard also looked at the role Judge Gorsuch will play in the job rights ruling.
Gorsuch is the interesting question here.
Wow.
Gorsuch is a Scalia acolyte. Gorsuch believes in textualism. That is, in interpreting a statute, we start with the text, not with the legislative history.
And he said during this, this is a close issue.
Right.
And I'm with you on textual evidence. With you on textual evidence.
Yeah, he also said maybe we should leave this to Congress.
Yeah.
And we risk massive social upheaval if we do this.
Gorsuch did say sex may not be the only factor, but it is a factor in these cases.
And under Title VII, that means it's illegal.
He said that.
Right.
So let's get to the bottom line. Usually coming out of these arguments, we have a better idea of where this is going, and we really don't.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, we do have a lot of protections in place, and we should focus on that, and we should continue to fight for more protections.
And lest we forget, the House of Representatives of the United States has already passed the Equality Act.
Right.
And there are the votes in the Senate to pass it, but McConnell won't allow it to the floor.
There are the votes in the Senate to pass it if they can do it without a roll call. If it could be a voice vote, it would probably pass.
We need a Democratic majority in the Senate. We need a Democratic president who's not going to veto it.
Thank you, Professor Arthur Leonard. You can read Arthur's blog. You also write for the Gay City News about all these cases at length. Thank you.
Thank you, Art.
Okay. I'm Andy Hum.
I'm Ann Northrup.
For an analysis of how the cases the Supreme Court is considering fit in the whole context of LGBTQ rights in the U.S., here's veteran gay journalist Rex Walkner.
In the U.S., 22 states currently prohibit job discrimination based on sexual orientation, and 21 states prohibit job discrimination based on gender identity. Two of the five U.S. territories also ban job discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity, as does the Federal District, Washington, D.C. This Supreme Court ruling would not affect any of those protections. In addition, in states without protections, big cities and university towns tend to have their own local protections, which also would not be affected. So this eventual ruling could protect or not LGB or T people in 29 states, and primarily LGBT people who live outside of cities in those states, although federal law in some cases would have more teeth than a local city ordinance. But any determination by the Supreme Court about whether protections based on sex do or do not include sexual orientation and gender identity could spill over into other areas of law where this concept has come into play, such as housing, schools, and health care. So the case could end up down the road affecting more than just employment. For This Way Out, I'm Rex Walkner.
And next time on This Way Out...
Here comes the National March on Washington for lesbian gay rights.
We are everywhere!
I never thought that I would ever see anything like this.
You wouldn't know how many people were gay until you took a look at this march.
You want those prominent fans out there to turn around and focus on one of the largest demonstrations in the history of this country!
What disturbed me was to pick up a Washington Post and see 25,000, and pick up a New York Times and see 75,000, and listen to the local news that's at 125,000. I think we have to teach straight people how to count.
Our observance of LGBTQ History Month continues in Washington, D.C., as we remember the first ever National Queer Rights March in the United States. Return with us to October 14, 1979, next time on This Way Out. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Rob LaCrone and Jessica Andrea, produced by Brian DeShazer, and Anna Edwards, produced by Judd Proctor and Ryan Burns. Thanks also to Ann Northrup and Andy Hum of Gay USA, and Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez of Democracy Now! Tim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, John Beaupre, Richard Merck, and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all of the listener donors who make this program possible, including you. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KICILP, Iowa City, Iowa, WELTLP, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 2MIA, Griffith, New South Wales, and a wide array of community radio stations and other outlets around the world, including this one. Please stay tuned.